So imagine you have access to like the world's most powerful supercomputer.
Okay, I like where this is going.
Right. And you're using it to run this massive, incredibly complex simulation of the economy, basically to test out a brand new policy.
Just a casual Tuesday.
Exactly. So you hit run, and the results that come back are just staggering. I mean, the computer predicts this new policy is going to be a universal home run.
Like everyone loves it.
Yeah. Massive economic success, unanimous approval from the public, the whole nine yards. So, based on that data, you roll it out.
Makes sense. You trust the supercomputer.
Right. But then a few months later, someone goes into the code of that simulation and tweaks one single microscopic mathematical setting.
Oh, no.
Yeah. A setting so deeply buried in the machinery that nobody even thought to look at it twice. And suddenly, that exact same simulation tells a completely different story.
Let me guess, not a universal home run.
Not even close. The massive success turns into this like barely noticeable gain, and instead of universal approval, a quarter of the population is absolutely furious.
Wow. It's basically the ultimate mathematical butterfly effect.
It really is.
You change a tiny, seemingly invisible pixel in the background machinery, and the entire reality that the model outputs is just radically altered.
And the terrifying part is that the people running these models often have no idea it's even happening.
Right. None at all.
Welcome to this deep dive. Our mission today is to explore this hidden trap lurking inside the very tools we use to understand the world.
It's a fascinating topic.
It is. We are unpacking a highly technical but deeply, deeply consequential 2026 paper by the economist Orhan Tarul.
Titled Calibration as a Channel for Discretization Error.
That's the one. And, we're going to figure out why these massive economic models sometimes just hallucinate wildly different answers based entirely on their underlying math grids.
And maybe more importantly, we're going to look at a new mathematical alarm bell.
Like a check engine light for math.
Exactly. A tool that might save researchers from making, well, catastrophic policy miscalculations.
Because the stakes here are incredibly high, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. When governments and institutions rely on supercomputers to tell them, how to govern or how to tax or how to design welfare
We
programs,
tend to just trust the machine.
right, the natural tendency for all of us is to treat those computer outputs as objective truth.
Yeah, it's math. It must be right.
Exactly. But this paper demonstrates that sometimes these models aren't telling us anything about the real world at all.
Wait, really? What are they telling us then?
They're just reflecting their own internal structural glitches.
That is wild. Okay, to really grasp the dramatic real-world consequences of this glitch, we need to look at a specific case study from the paper.
The education one.
Yeah. The author examines what's called a heterogeneous agent model of education finance.
Which sounds super intimidating.
It does. But before we go any further, I want to clarify that heterogeneous agent is just a fancy way of saying diverse.
Right. It's not just one average person cloned a million times.
Exactly. Instead of a model that assumes every single person in the economy is an identical average clone, this model simulates a population of diverse individuals.
So some are wealthy, some are poor, some have like different skill levels.
Yep, exactly like the real world. And in this specific simulation, the researcher is comparing the United States education system with a European-style fiscal regime.
Right, so comparing a system that relies heavily on local property taxes and private spending, like the US.
With one where education is much more centralized and publicly funded, like in Europe.
And they were trying to answer a really specific question with this model.
Which is, if the US adopted a European-style system, would overall economic welfare increase?
Now, I want to jump in right here and set a very clear boundary for you listening, because anytime we bring up taxes in education, people understandably get, well, defensive.
Oh, absolutely. Politics instantly enters the chat.
Right. But what I love about this paper is that it completely ignores the politics.
Yes, 100%.
You might personally love the US system, or you might firmly believe the European system is better. But this study takes no stance on that whatsoever.
Not at all.
The author is simply using this highly debated policy as a mathematical stress test.
We are looking exclusively at the engine of the model, not the political destination.
Exactly. That framing is essential. The model is just a neutral testing ground. So the researcher sets up this massive simulation and runs it on what they call a coarse grid.
Okay, let's explain the grid concept because it's kind of the heart of the whole mystery here.
Yeah, we have to talk about pixels.
Right. Reality is continuous, right? Income can be literally any exact dollar and cent amount.
Sure.
But computers can't handle infinity. They have to break reality down into discrete buckets or pixels.
They have to simplify it to do the math.
Right. So a coarse grid just means a lower resolution simulation. In this case, the computer uses 60 data points to represent human capital.
60 points. And when the simulation finishes running at that resolution, the results are incredibly definitive.
Like no-brainer definitive.
Yeah. The coarse grid model concludes that adopting the European model would raise lifetime consumption for the U.S. by a massive 3.8%.
Which is a huge number in economics.
Massive. Furthermore, it predicts that absolutely everyone, literally 100% of households, would be in favor of the reform.
Unanimous approval.
Right. It also predicts that Europe produces more per capita than the U.S.
Okay, so if you are a policymaker reading that report, the decision looks incredibly obvious. You adopt the reform.
Without hesitation. But then the researcher runs the exact same model.
Same environment, same data.
Everything is identical. The only thing they change is the resolution.
They run it on a fine grid.
Yes, using 240 points for human capital instead of 60. So it's four times as detailed.
Four times the resolution. And what happens?
The model's conclusions completely fall apart.
Just break down.
Entirely. That massive 3.8% benefit, it plummets to a mere 0.4%.
Oh, wow.
And the unanimous 100% approval just vanishes. Suddenly, a quarter of the simulated population fiercely opposes the reform.
Wait, really? A full 25% are just angry now.
Yep. And that prediction about Europe producing more per capita, the high-resolution model reverses it entirely. It correctly predicts that the U.S. actually produces more per capita.
It reminds me of zooming in on a low-resolution digital photograph.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Like, in the low-res version, there's this blurry gray blob in the background that looks exactly like a monster. It's terrifying.
But then you zoom in.
Right. You get the high-resolution version, you zoom in, and you realize it's just the shadow of a tree. The reality of the scene never changed.
Only the pixelation changed.
But wait, I have to imagine economists know about pixels, right? Don't researchers rigorously test their models for this exact kind of low-resolution error before they, you know, publish their findings and advise presidents?
Well, they do. And they spend immense amounts of time and computing power on it.
So how did they miss this?
They run these highly complex diagnostics. You might hear terms like Bellman residuals or convergence checks.
Which just sound like made-up sci-fi words to me.
Right. But they are really just fancy ways of asking the computer, are the simulated people in this model making logical choices based on the rules we gave them?
Okay, that makes sense. Check if the digital citizens are acting rationally.
Exactly. But this brings us to the core revelation of Tarullo's paper. Economists are absolutely testing for errors, but they are only testing half of the machinery.
Wait, only half?
Yes.
Okay, if they're only testing half, what is the half they're looking at and what are they missing? Because if the first route is checking the people, the second route must be checking, like, the world they live in.
You are hitting on the exact divide there.
Yeah.
The error we are talking about, this discretization error.
Which is the technical term for the pixelation problem.
Right. It travels through two entirely different routes inside a model. The first route is the solver channel.
Okay, the solver channel?
This is what the economists are obsessed with. Is how well the grid solves the simulated people's individual problems.
Like deciding how much to save for retirement.
Exactly. If a simulated person is trying to make that decision, the solver channel makes sure the math is accurately capturing their behavior on that 60-point grid. That's the part that gets rigorously tested.
Okay, so the standard tests ensure the people are acting right. What is the blind spot then?
The blind spot is the second route, which the paper calls the calibration channel.
The calibration channel.
See, a model isn't just a static terrarium you drop simulated people into. Researchers have to tune the overarching rules of that world. They have to calibrate it.
So its starting conditions match the real world.
Exactly. In our education model, the researchers needed the model's concept of the size of government to match reality.
Which means looking at actual data.
Right. In the real world U.S. data, the public share of education spending is 69.6%. So the model has to turn its internal dials until its simulation hits exactly 69.6%.
And what's the problem with that?
Standard diagnostics completely ignore how the grid resolution affects this specific tuning process.
I see. And this is where that U-shaped curve comes into play, right?
Yes, the U-curve is everything here.
Because the way the economy responds to the size of government in this specific simulation forms this giant U-shape. Let's make sure we really visualize why a curve causes so much chaos for a grid.
The U-shape is basically the key to the hallucination.
Okay, break it down.
In this model, if the size of government is very small, that's the left side of the U.
So taxes are low.
Right. Taxes are low, which is good for private spending. But public schools are so severely underfunded that overall human capital falls.
So that's a downward trajectory.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, if the size of government is very large, the right side of the U.
Taxes are painfully high.
Yes. But public schools are incredibly well-funded, so human capital rises again.
Okay, so we had the two high sides of the U. What about the bottom?
The very bottom of the U curve is the worst of both worlds. Taxes are high enough to hurt, but schools still aren't funded enough to really help.
So it's kind of like building a bridge over a river.
How so?
Well, if you build a cheap small footbridge, that's the left side. It doesn't cost much, and a few people get across.
Right.
If you build a massive, expensive suspension bridge, the right side, it costs a fortune. But everyone gets across quickly.
Okay, I follow.
But the bottom of the U curve is like building exactly half of a massive suspension bridge.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You spend a ton of money, but nobody can actually cross the river. It's literally the least efficient point possible.
That is a perfect analogy, yes.
So how did the 60-point grid interact with that valley?
Okay, so when the model used the coarse 60-point grid, it was forced to tune its dials to hit that 69.6% target for the size of government.
Right.
But because the pixels were so wide and clunky, the computer just couldn't find a pixel at the very bottom of the valley.
Oh.
It literally didn't exist in that resolution.
So what did it do?
To make the math work and hit the target, the coarse grid was forced to calibrate the U.S. economy to sit slightly past the bottom of the curve.
Wait, so it put the U.S. on the rising slope?
Yes. It placed the U.S. firmly on the rising right-hand slope of the U.
But the 240-point fine grid had smaller pixels. It had more options.
Exactly. The fine grid had enough resolution to calibrate the U.S. economy exactly at the turning point, right at the absolute bottom of the valley.
Which completely flips the reality of the simulation.
Entirely.
Because if the coarse grid tells you the U.S. is already on the upward slope, moving toward a European system just looks like you are continuing up the hill to greater prosperity.
It looks easy. It looks like a win.
Right. But if the fine grid reveals you are actually stuck at the absolute bottom of the valley, moving toward Europe means you have to fight your way up this massive hill of new progressive taxation, which offsets all the educational gains.
That is the exact mechanical reason for the hallucination.
Yeah.
The math just couldn't see the bottom of the valley.
That is wild.
And the paper actually measures how much of the error was caused by this specific calibration blind spot.
Oh, they put a number on it.
Yeah. If you keep the environment dials locked in place, and you only improve the solver channel?
The part economists actually test.
Right. The welfare conclusion only shifts by 0.11 percentage points.
So it barely moves.
It barely moves. But if you keep the grid resolution locked and you only swap out the calibrated parameters, the dials they turn to hit the 69.6%.
What happens?
The conclusion swings by a massive 3.17 percentage points.
That is staggering. So the calibration channel accounted for, what, almost all of it?
94% of the discrepancy.
94%. So the error had almost nothing to do with solving human behavior.
Right.
It was entirely driven by the model trying to tune itself using a blurry map.
Exactly. And the terrifying reality is that unless a researcher repeats the entire painstakingly slow calibration process at a massive high resolution, they will never catch it.
And I'm guessing they don't want to do that.
They avoid it at all costs because calibrating a complex model on a fine grid can literally take a supercomputer months to process.
Okay, this brings us to a really practical dilemma. If we know researchers are essentially calibrating these models while blindfolded to 94% of the error, how do we solve this? We can't just mandate that every economist run everything at maximum resolution 100 times.
No, science would grind to a halt. It's just not physically possible.
Right. So what's the fix?
This is where Terreur's paper offers a lifeline. He derives a new mathematical screening statistic. He calls it simply the A statistic.
The A statistic. Okay, what exactly is the A statistic measuring?
It basically measures the ratio between the two routes we've been discussing. It looks at the calibration error and divides it by the solver error.
Oh, I see.
It basically asks the math, is the pixelation error traveling mostly through the solver, which we are already testing for, or is it traveling mostly through the calibration, which is our blind spot?
So what was the number in the education model?
In the education model, with the massive hallucination, the A statistic equals 14.
Meaning the hidden calibration error is 14 times larger than the visible solver error.
Exactly.
It sounds like a medical triage tool for data.
That's a good way to look at it.
It's in like an emergency room doctor using a quick blood test. The test doesn't cure the patient, but it immediately tells the doctor, stop looking at the lungs, the internal bleeding is in the stomach.
Yes.
It tells the researcher exactly where the model is fragile before they spend months on it.
That is the exact intended function. And the best part is that it is computationally incredibly cheap to run.
Oh, nice.
It doesn't require the researcher to do a full months-long calibration on a fine grid. They can calculate it using information they generate during their initial low-resolution run.
So no supercomputers burning for months.
Right. It only requires a few extra solves and something called a calibration Jacobian.
Okay. Calibration Jacobian is one of those terms that immediately makes my eyes glaze over. Let's translate that for everyone.
Fair enough. Think of it like a massive soundboard in a recording studio.
Okay.
A Jacobian is essentially a mathematical map that tracks sensitivities. It tells you exactly how pushing one slider up affects the volume and pitch of every single other track on the board.
Oh, I get it.
And the researcher already has this map from setting up the model in the first place.
Hmm.
So generating the A statistic takes almost no extra time.
I love the elegance of that. But I do want to push back on the mechanics here just a little bit, because something is bothering me about using a ratio like this.
Go for it.
If this A number is just taken from a single snapshot of the mathematical soundboard, how can it reliably predict an error when the model is crossing a massive U-shaped valley?
What do you mean?
Well, a single snapshot taken at the bottom of a valley doesn't tell you anything about how steep the mountains are a mile down the road. Doesn't the shape of the curve ruin the prediction?
That is a phenomenal catch.
Mm.
And honestly, it's a limitation the paper explicitly addresses.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, the author's very clear. A is an alarm bell, not a crystal ball.
Okay, I like that distinction.
Over a large policy step that crosses a major turning point, like our U-curve, a local snapshot cannot be trusted to give you the exact size or even the direction of the final error.
So it might flag an error as positive when it ends up being deeply negative.
Yes, absolutely. Because extrapolating a straight line across a curved valley mathematically breaks down.
Right.
But that doesn't invalidate the tool. Because its job isn't to give you the finalized perfect answer. Its job is to scream at you. Your standard diagnostics are failing.
The environment is highly sensitive.
Exactly. You have to bite the bullet, spend the computational money, and recalibrate this specific model at a finer resolution.
So if A is a large number, you don't publish. You stop and investigate.
Precisely.
Now, if I'm listening to this right now, I might be thinking, well, great, the math is fundamentally broken. We should just throw out all economic modeling entirely.
Which would be a bit of an overreaction.
Right, because the paper actually pivots here to show that the field's favorite, most heavily relied upon models are actually perfectly safe, right?
Yes, and understanding why they are safe reveals the deepest insight of the whole paper, honestly. The author applies the A statistic to the Iyagari model.
Let's define the Iyagari model for anyone who hasn't taken a graduate macroeconomics seminar. What is it?
It is basically the absolute workhorse model of modern economics.
Okay.
It's a model that simulates incomplete markets. Basically, it explores a world where people can't borrow infinite amounts of money, so they have to defensively save up for a rainy day.
Like losing a job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it is used constantly to study inequality, taxation, and monetary policy.
Got it. So how does this workhorse hold up against the A statistic?
Really well. In the standard Iyagari setup, researchers usually calibrate the model by tuning a dial called the discount factor.
Which is what?
It's just how much people value the future compared to the present.
Makes sense.
And they tune that dial to hit a conventional real-world target, usually a capital output ratio of 3. When Toro runs his eye diagnostic on this extremely common setup, the statistic comes back at only 0.15.
0.15. So the ratio is tiny.
Incredibly small. It means the solver channel carries 7/8 of the total error. The calibration blind spot is negligible.
Wow. Okay.
So the standard practice that economists have been doing for decades, just refining the grid while keeping the environment locked, is exactly the right thing to do.
Mm.
The workhorse is totally vindicated.
Okay, so the Iyagari model itself isn't broken, but this is where the paper runs a controlled experiment that honestly completely shifted how I think about data.
It's the best part of the paper.
The author stays inside that exact same Iyagari model. He doesn't change the environment. He doesn't change the grid resolution.
Nope.
The only thing he changes is the target he's aiming for.
The target moment, yes. Instead of tuning the model to hit the capital output ratio, he decides to calibrate the model to match a Wealth-Gyani index,
which is just a standard 0-to-1 scale used to measure how unequally wealth is distributed in society.
Right, and simply by changing that target, the A statistic skyrockets from 0.15 to 1.3.
That's almost a tenfold jump just from picking a different target.
It gets worse.
Oh, boy.
Then he calibrates the exact same model to match the wealth share of the top 10% of society.
And what happens?
The A statistic jumps to 5.5.
Yikes.
Finally, he calibrates it to match the fraction of households sitting at the absolute borrowing limit. You know, people with zero credit left.
And what happens to the alarm bell?
Explodes to 37.
37. Wait, really? Okay, this is the profound takeaway.
It is.
The hallucination factor, the fragility of the math, it isn't a property of the model itself. The Iyagari code is totally fine.
Our code is fine.
The fragility is entirely a property of the pairing between the model and the specific real-world statistic the researcher chooses to match.
You hit the nail on the head.
But why? Why does aiming at the borrowing limit completely break the machine?
It all comes down to the slope of the calibration map. Mm. Think about steering a boat versus steering a sports car.
Okay, I'm with you.
If a target has a steep slope, like the steering wheel in a sports car, a tiny nudge of the wheel causes a massive swerve in the car's direction.
Right, highly responsive.
The model locks onto that target very firmly. The capital output ratio has a steep slope. But if a target has a flat slope, it's like a broken steering wheel on an old boat. You have to spin the wheel frantically just to get the boat to drift a few inches.
Because if you are looking at the fraction of people at the absolute borrowing limit, most of the people in the overall economy aren't anywhere near that limit, right?
Exactly.
So you can spin the discount factor dial in the model wildly, and that specific subgroup of people might barely budge.
That is exactly the mechanism. And because the slope is so flat, any tiny pixelation error in the math forces the computer to drastically overcorrect the dial just to try and hit the target.
It's overcompensating.
Yes. The error gets magnified exponentially. In the case where the A statistic hit 37, the computer had to spin the dial so violently to hit the borrowing limit target that it actually left the admissible range entirely.
What does that mean?
The model literally tried to set a parameter to a mathematical number that cannot physically exist.
It spun the dial right off the machine.
It really did. And the lesson for the economics profession here is undeniable. You have to be incredibly careful about the targets you pick.
You need targets with steep slopes.
Sports car steering wheels. You need them to keep discretization error from polluting your answers.
Uh-huh.
And you must use the A statistic before you run your final model to evaluate that choice.
Because it tells you immediately if your chosen target is going to break your entire simulation.
Exactly.
Man, this has been such a wild journey into the absolute basement of how our quantitative reality is constructed.
It's deep in the machinery, for sure.
We started with a model hallucinating a massive, universally loved policy win that just evaporated the second the resolution improved.
Which is terrifying.
Truly. And we discovered that standard mathematical checks and economic modeling have this massive blind spot regarding calibration. That sneaky route where pixelation errors distort the very dials meant to anchor the model to reality.
And we learned that a model's fragility depends entirely on the pairing of the target and the underlying math.
Flat slopes cause absolute chaos.
They do.
But thankfully, we also have the antidote. The A statistic provides a cheap, highly effective early warning system.
It triages the model.
Right. Catching these hidden calibration errors before they can escape the lab and inform bad, incredibly costly policy.
It's the check engine light we desperately needed to tell us when to stop, spend the money, and recalibrate at a higher resolution.
Which brings us right back to that invisible dial hidden deep in the code. We've seen today how a simple difference between a 60-node and a 240-node grid shifted a single education policy recommendation by 900%.
And completely flipped our understanding of an entire national economy.
Right. Which leaves me with a thought I really want you to mull over today. If an error this deep and this consequential could hide in standard economic models for this long, what hidden calibration errors might be lurking right now in the vastly more complex, multidimensional climate or epidemiological models that are driving today's global policy decisions?
That is a terrifying but absolutely necessary question to ask.
It really is. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the resolution of the reality you're presented with.